You're listening to the Doggeritaville podcast. I'm Laura.
And I'm Lily. We are two dog professionals with two different styles, two different backgrounds, and two common goals.
To drink delicious margaritas and talk about dogs.
Welcome to Doggeritaville. Welcome to episode 30 of the Doggeritaville podcast. Today we are drinking whatever the fuck we want and talking about the world of rescue.
Yes. I feel like we should drink whatever the fuck we want from here on out.
Great. I like it. You know, and if you don't like it, listener, you know what you can do? You can send us a margarita theme. We're running out and it's the most tedious part of this podcast.
It really is. And you know what? Sometimes I don't want to drink tequila. I want to drink something else.
Oh, so like we're moving away from even margaritas.
I mean, maybe not. We'll see. I'm not that creative.
We'll have to start calling it the Doggo Whateverville podcast.
Today's theme was brought to you by the fact that I absolutely refuse to go to the store. So here we are. So for every episode, we pick a theme for our margaritas and each do our own take on it to be determined if that continues to happen. We post the recipes on Instagram, except for our current episode, because grapefruit is gross, and I refuse to give you those recipes. We're always looking for new ideas, so let us know if you have an idea for an episode or a margarita. We've been getting a ton of episode ideas, which I really like, because, like, I thought of this one. And I was excited to do it. And then as I was doing the outline, I was like, I don't like this. our listeners have good episode ideas. Now we just need good margarita ideas.
So we have a new Patreon supporter and we are going to shout her out. Her name is Dana and she knows Laura. And she still wants to give us money. So that's pretty impressive.
That's rude. Dana's the best. I love her dogs. I met her when she was fostering a blind pit bull. He was like a senior blind pit bull. And I was like, no one's going to take this fucking dog. And she did. He was so cute. He just passed away a few months ago. But she has two other dogs, Cashew. And she has a greyhound, but I forget what the greyhound's name is. But pretty much anyone that has a greyhound is automatically my friend. So...
Is it the greyhound that I met? Wallace or
I was Walter? I was sitting here thinking that his name was Walter, but I don't know. All right. Well, Dana, thanks for giving us money. I really like your dogs, even though I don't know their names.
So our first segment here is a Q&A from a listener and an Instagram follower. And she asked us, what is your opinion on invisible fences? I understand that it is an aversive training technique, and we plan to do positive training with our dog. Should we avoid this option altogether? Which is a great question.
Yeah, I love these questions that kind of paint the reality that comes along with dog training. I like to think, even though I'm a very pessimistic person, I do like to convince myself that we all try to be as compassionate as possible with our dogs. But certain things, this being a great example, are just not really realistic. Fences are fucking insane expensive. Anytime I'm not in a city and I'm like out in like a more rural place, like when I go to Minnesota and stuff, I'm like, anytime I see a fence, I'm like, how did you fence an acre? That's like $1 million. I've had to build a wall for my backyard at my old house and my new house. The old house was over 10K and this new house was just under. Obviously I did not pay for it because I don't have that kind of money. But like that's just the suburb. So when you're talking about like somewhere that's more rural, like Jesus Christ, I can't imagine how much it costs to fence an acre even with like the cheapest fencing. So yeah, I mean the reality is that fences are really expensive and depending on where you live, that might not be a realistic option. This won't be surprising to anybody, but I think it's just kind of a personal choice in whatever works for you, your schedule, your lifestyle, and most importantly, your dog. Because I don't care who you are. Every dog is different. I don't care how good of a trainer you are or not in whatever methods you use or you don't use. But my dogs are all completely different. Peter has always been off leash his whole life with zero intentional training. So he just, I mean, he's just always naturally been good at it, and I don't question it, and we didn't do anything for it. Charlie's pretty good off-leash, although he's never really allowed off-leash, but he has kind of a lot of anxiety, so I'm confident that he will not go away from me. But then there's dogs like Doobie. I can't imagine a single situation in which I would trust him off-leash, ever. I don't care how much time I put into it. I don't think I could ever trust him off-leash, because he's just a fucking squirrel. Like, his whole brain is just squirrels. So, yeah, I don't think I would ever, ever trust him off-leash. I don't know that I would honestly even trust him with an invisible fence, to be fair. But even then, like, even if I wanted to try, like, that would be so much time. It's a lot of time that I don't have. So, I mean, I think that if you plan to train positively, but not having a fence is going to be a concern. I don't think you should feel bad about needing an invisible fence. They're not mutually exclusive, right? Like, you can have an invisible fence and work on training your dog positively with that being, like, the backup or something. And honestly, I don't think, regardless of how you feel about aversives, I don't think you should feel bad about an invisible fence, because honestly, it's just a tool to keep your dog safe. That's literally its sole purpose. Yes, obviously it's an aversive, but, you know, dogs have to live in a human world, and sometimes that's the fallout. I think it's 100% possible to train, and again, depends on the dog, but it's 100% possible to train your dog to have a good recall and respect the boundaries of your fenceless yard solely using positive methods. That's absolutely possible. Does it take a ton of time and work? Yes. That's not always a bad thing, but it's not always a realistic thing either. So
I did write a little bit about this in my upcoming segment, but most invisible fence companies that I'm familiar with do train the boundaries using positive reinforcement, and the fence is just like a safety net. So they put up little blue flags like a foot in or a few feet in from where the fence is, and they teach the dog how to respect the boundary of the flags. And then if they end up going past that boundary, then they'll get a shock.
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong inherently with invisible fences. I don't think they're necessary or unnecessary. I think it's just a matter of, you know, your dog and your property and how that all gets set up. I think it's kind of similar to a prong collar, where it's just sort of a shortcut to teaching your dog those boundaries. But if your dog has a good recall, I don't really know that you would need it. I don't know. I could go on and I could hypothesize about this all day, because I've never done it. But I would imagine that the invisible fence is just kind of a shortcut to cut down the amount of time it takes to teach them that boundary.
Boundary training is actually not as hard as it sounds. And of course, it does depend on the dog. Like, everything always depends on the dog. And there's, like, lots of things that you can Google if you're interested in that. I don't really want to talk about it right now, because I don't want to do anything right now. So I'm just going to read what I wrote. I basically have nothing to add, because Laura pretty much covered everything. And yet I wrote 5 paragraphs on it. So I think I feel the same way about invisible fences as I feel about prongs or e-collars, which is, I am probably never going to outright recommend one to you, and I'm never going to teach you how to use one. And that's mostly because it's just not my area of expertise, it's not how I train, and it's not how I want to train. But at the end of the day, it is your choice, and what you're comfortable with is all that matters. And I would definitely say pick a fence company who does training. I'm not familiar with a ton of different companies, but there are a few around here in the area that I've looked at for some clients. And most of them, actually, well, all of them that I'm familiar with do offer training. But just make sure, because I want you to have guidance, and I want you to feel very confident that you know exactly how your fence works and how your dog is going to learn about it. Again, I don't have a ton of knowledge, but from what I do know about invisible fences, I'm pretty sure that most of the companies teach boundaries exactly the same way you would teach them without an invisible fence. So there are little blue flags, like I talked about. There are a few feet inside of the invisible fence, and they teach the dog to respect the flags. And the fence companies that I'm familiar with do teach those boundaries using positive reinforcement. So if your goal is simply to train your dog with positive methods, I think you're actually going to be able to meet that goal as long as you hire a company who does train that way. And the fence itself, of course, is like not fun. It's an aversive or whatever. But I wouldn't call the fence a training tool, to be fair. I would call it a management tool or a safety net. So I think that you can move forward with a clear conscience if you're aiming to train positively. And of course, there's always a possibility that your dog will run through the flags if there's a good enough reason, like if they see wildlife or a dog walking by or just something that gets them super excited. And that's where the shock would come in. And I will say, I have seen a dog run through an invisible fence when my dog and I were walking past, and it was hard to watch him get shocked. Like, they turned that thing up way high because it needs to be a deterrent. And that was hard to watch. So I'll say that just so you know it.
But don't you control the level? Or is it just one level?
I have no idea. I just know that the one time that I've seen a dog run through it, it was awful. Like, just awful. And then personally, I live on 2 wooded acres and I don't have a fence. And the person who asked this question told us what she was quoted to put in a fence. And I would never spend that much money on a fence for my yard. So what I have done is teach my dogs boundaries in the yard, besides Indy, who just stays on a long leash in the yard. And on 2 or 3 occasions, there has been a good enough reason for Mooney to disrespect that boundary. But our property just backs up to more woods. It backs up to like a disc golf course. So he's not going to get hurt if he crosses that boundary. If we lived by a busy street, or I didn't trust his recall, or if our woods had like mountain lions in it or something, I would probably opt for an invisible fence because I would rather that my dog got shocked a couple of times for disrespecting the boundary than get dead. So I guess like what we're saying is know all of the facts and then make your choice and make it, you know, based on what you need and what makes you feel good about it. And like, you know, you could say, you know what, we should just be done with this segment. I was gonna say you could call kind of any fence a quote-unquote aversive if it's keeping your dog away from something they want, right? Like, you're not using a fence to train, you're using a dog to keep it somewhere.
Yeah,
to keep it safe.
What she okay, said.
Let's be done with this.
I'm tired of this.
I'm tired of this. So that's a Q&A about invisible fences. We'll take a break here, and when we get back, we will talk about Rescue 101. Margarita check. What did you make today?
Nothing good.
I was all excited.
Oh, he's drinking. I was like, what is that noise? I was so excited because I had watermelon in my fridge. And I was like, ooh, watermelon margarita. It's not good like it was before. It's kind of overcast and it's finally below 100 today. So I didn't want to do a frozen. And I just muddled it and it's not very good. But there was a whole conundrum with my muddler that is MIA. So it was a whole thing. I made the whole margarita very angrily, and it shows because it's not very good. It's not made with love.
It just has, like, some bad energy.
It does, you know. It's got bad vibes.
I saw this this picture the other day that I was like, I want somebody to leave me this kind of review. I don't know what it was for, maybe a gym or something, but it's 1 star. And it says, I have been a professional medium for 15 and a half years, and I am very sensitive to all the energy forces that surround us. The instructors are great, and the facility is clean. But when I walked into the studio, I was, in all capital letters, assaulted by the dark energy radiating from Monica at the front desk.
I totally know what she means. That's hilarious.
I really, really want someone to leave a review like that about me. Those are the only bad reviews I will be accepting in the future.
I'm still laughing about the bad review saga.
Oh yeah.
I checked back multiple times, but it ended pretty quickly, unfortunately.
She's got nothing to say.
Oh man.
I love it when grown women throw a fit, and I love it when those women are attorneys.
Yeah. She's very clearly a lunatic.
Anyways, that's awesome. So we're going to take all of that out of the episode. But for the listeners, if you have a bad review to leave me, please make it about my dark energy. And that's all I will be accepting from
and now. And how it assaults you.
How it assaults you, yes. Okay, I made a lavender-themed margarita because... Because
that's what we were supposed to do, and I forgot.
I texted Laura this week, and I was like, can we do lavender? She was like, yeah, that sounds bomb. And then today,
I don't believe that I said that, because I don't like lavender, but... I agree. Okay, I know that I agree.
I'm going to go fucking find it right now. I'm going to go fucking find it right now.
I know in today's lack of preparation, I remembered you saying that, and I remember agreeing to it, but I don't like lavender.
Lavender sounds bomb. August 21st, 1:24 p.m.
Damn it.
From Laura Merkovich.
Wait, when was it?
August 21st.
Oh, that's why. I was in Montana. I'm in a good mood when I'm there.
Okay,
great. I don't even like lavender.
Okay, well, that's this situation. Listen, this is my life, you guys. So I made my own lavender syrup. It's delicious.
How?
I boiled sugar and water, and that's how you make syrup. And then after it was boiled, I put in a couple tablespoons of lavender and just let it steep for like a half hour, and then I strained it.
Of like plant lavender, like loose leaf lavender?
It's called culinary lavender, and I don't know what makes it different from like if you just went and picked lavender. But there's like a specific kind of lavender called culinary lavender that you can use for cooking and stuff.
And you went out and bought this? Why?
I got it on Amazon for like $10.
For this?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I also really, really like lavender. So I will be making a lot of other things with it.
I used to use it for the dogs all the time, like when I would go to work and stuff, but I just hate it. Like how most people feel about patchouli is how I feel about lavender.
Interesting. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it, love it.
Yeah.
So I did 1 juiced lime, 1 juiced lemon, 3 ounces of tequila, 1 ounce of my lavender syrup, and then I rimmed my glass with sugar and crushed lavender. What face are you making right now?
It just tastes like straight tequila.
Put some agave in it.
Or I don't have any agave.
Squeeze a lime into it. Put in granulated sugar.
Oh, I should put in granulated sugar. That's a good idea. Is it good?
The lavender? I love it. Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Does it taste pretty lavendery? Because, like, I've tried the lavender lattes and stuff, and they don't really taste like anything.
So I made this earlier this week as a test, and I put too much of my syrup in, and that time it tasted overwhelmingly of lavender, but this time I put in less of the syrup, and it is just kind of like a nice note in there. But I really like it. It's one of those dangerous drinks where like it doesn't really taste like alcohol. I could probably drink like a whole pitcher of it. It's just like lemonade.
Those are the best kinds. Man, yeah. I should have been dedicated like you. Okay. World of Rescue 101. Here we go.
We're both so excited to talk about it.
I'm just not in. I'm just not. So yeah, just a disclaimer that when I say the World of Rescue, I mean that it is sort of like an all-encompassing term as far as like rescue organizations and shelters and whatever else falls under that umbrella. Basically, the act of rescuing and rehoming animals in whatever form. We'll go over both since Lily has more of a shelter background and I have more of a rescue background.
And to be just totally transparent, I'm not familiar with the goings-on behind the scenes at the shelter, so I don't know how they make decisions or how things are run necessarily. I just volunteered there, got the dogs out of their kennels for a walk or to play in the yard or something. So my knowledge is not like super well-rounded, I guess.
So I think the most important thing that a lot of people don't realize is that much like the dog training world, the rescue and shelter side of things is also completely unregulated, and it should have been regulated like yesterday because it's terrible. There's really no industry standard at all other than like the 5 freedoms. Maybe it's not like technical.
And what is that?
I saved it because I knew I would forget. So the 5 freedoms is technically from the veterinary world, but it's just freedom from hunger and thirst, freedom from discomfort, freedom from pain, injury, or disease, freedom to express normal behaviors, and freedom from fear and distress. So, I mean, that's not officially an industry standard, but I would like to convince myself that it is.
Well, definitely in most shelter environments, you're going to hit, like, three at most.
That's sad, but true. So, yeah, I mean, that's as close as you're going to get to any sort of standard in the industry. And I'd be willing to bet that most people in the industry couldn't list them. I mean, I can't list them. I know of them and I, like, know what they are, but I didn't memorize them. But I think if you talk to a bunch of people, especially in this town, that run rescues, everyone would be like, what's the five freedoms? Like, no idea. So, yeah, I mean, as an industry, it's really tough. It drives me absolutely batty. Because without regulation, it's really hard to be taken seriously, much less professionally. So to put it into perspective, shelter medicine for animals is legitimately a brand new specialty. I think there's only two colleges in the entire United States and Canada that even have it as a department. So that kind of shows you an insight on like how new and unregulated the industry is as a whole. Shelters have existed for however long now. Couldn't even imagine, but I would say a century maybe. I don't know.
What is the difference between regular medicine and shelter medicine?
It's shelter medicine is a new specialty that's specifically for veterinarians practicing within shelters, because it's completely different. You're dealing with like herd immunity and you're not dealing with owners at all and stuff like that. So just like you would have a specialist as far as like a surgeon or a cardiologist or whatever, now shelter medicine is starting to become a specialty. But like I said, I think right now, I could be wrong, but I know of two programs where you can specialize in shelter medicine if you're a veterinary student. There might be more, but as far as I know, there's only two. I'm confident there's only two in the U.S. There might be more in Canada, but I kind of don't think so. So, I mean, that tells you kind of everything you need to know, right? Like, we're not even a defined industry at this point, which has a lot of pitfalls. But yeah, like a basic outline, and I'm sure to forget someone, but I would break down kind of the rescue world into independent rescuers, which I really didn't want to list because I think they're bullshit, but...
Which just means, like, a person who finds a dog yeah. and rehomes it? Or
yep.
Okay.
So I would break it down into independent rescuers, rescue organizations, no-kill shelters, and then open admission shelters, which are more commonly referred to as kill shelters, which, stop fucking calling them that. I will not get on my soapbox about it, but stop calling them that. Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, independent rescuers I almost didn't list because generally it's terrible. It doesn't generally go well. But yeah, rescue organizations are generally 501c3 registered nonprofits. If they're not, they should be. But you would be kind of shocked at how many are not. They're usually foster-based, which can unfortunately lead to a lot of dogs that are like living in boarding facilities and stuff like that, because fosters are really hard to find. And some rescues do have their own private facilities, which kind of blurs the line between... you know, what's a rescue and what's a no-kill shelter, because once they have a facility, I feel like they kind of become a no-kill shelter, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of splitting hairs. No-kill shelters are also generally nonprofits, and a lot of open admission shelters are also nonprofits. So, with the exception of independent rescuers, most organizations in the field, regardless of semantics, are going to be a nonprofit registered 501c3. You can check that on the IRS website. You can look up anybody to make sure. You would be surprised how many rescues lose their 501 status and never tell anybody.
That's nice.
Uh-huh. And it's not easy to lose, so that should tell you a lot. Pretty much the only way they're going to revoke your 501 is if you don't file taxes. So.
And we've talked about this issue in our Dog Myths episode, too. So if you want more in-depth information about, like, what no-kill means, you should check out our Dog Myths episode.
Yeah. So, yeah, the distinction, just like a brief synopsis, the distinction between a no-kill shelter and an open admission shelter, or a kill shelter, which, you again, you shouldn't call it that, is pretty minimal. In order to call yourself no kill, you simply have to have a 90% live release rate, which just means that 90% of animals that are deemed healthy and treatable leave alive. So no kill shelters are typically managing admissions. I can't think of a no kill shelter that is open admissions. I mean, I'm sure there are some, like our county shelter is technically no kill because they have a 90% save rate, but they don't call themselves that.
I feel like it would be a really, really hard goal to achieve. Like
as open admissions. A lot of them are nowadays, but it just depends. Well, and it's weird the way that like it breaks up. Like our county shelter has a government contract, but then there's like another part of it that's their nonprofit. So like our county shelter is called the Animal Foundation, which has the government contract, but the Animal Foundation is the nonprofit side of it as well. So like as soon as Animal Control releases the dog, it goes to the nonprofit Animal Foundation, but it's all the same building.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so that's like what my whole paragraph was about, because I didn't understand like how an open admission shelter could be a nonprofit, because usually like if it's government run, they kind of prevent you from
it completely varies. So like that's our county shelter. So Vegas and Henderson are right next to each other. They're essentially the same thing. The Henderson shelter is the only other shelter in town besides our county shelter that serves the rest of the valley. And the Henderson shelter is government ran by the police department of Henderson. So they are not a nonprofit and they are open admission. So it just depends. But Animal Foundation is just one of those ones that happens to do both.
Got it.
So it's just kind of weird and confusing, and it's pretty much semantics, but yeah, so no-kill shelters can manage their admissions, and they pick and choose what they get to take, whereas open admission shelters have to take whatever comes to them. And healthy and treatable, we've talked about before, like Lily mentioned, so you can kind of go listen to my rant about that. But the idea of healthy and treatable is obviously subjective. So really the idea of a no-kill shelter is kind of bullshit, because it's really easy to get a 90% save rate of adoptable animals.
Right, because if you can pick and choose,
yeah. What's your definition of adoptable? So yeah, again, that kind of brings up how it's a problem that there's no standard beyond a statistic that's pretty open for interpretation. So
yeah, so the shelter that I worked at was owned and funded by the county, so it was a government-run shelter. And as far as I know, those kinds of shelters are usually like the animal control of that county.
Yeah,
and I kind of figured that the only reason a shelter would be open admission is if they were legally required to be, which, as far as I know, most government-owned shelters are.
Yeah.
So they literally have to take in any animal brought in by animal control. So that's an important distinction. The one that I worked at, I know they could turn away, like, owner surrenders, but if an animal control officer brought in an animal, they had to take it.
Oh, so interesting. So it's a strain,
basically. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important – that's a good question, because that's – like, we – the county shelter in Vegas has to take everything, but they have managed admissions because that's a best practice. Is having owner surrenders by appointment has been proven to be a best practice as far as reducing owner surrenders, because usually they can't wait that long and they find a different solution. They usually can rehome it themselves or whatever, which is better because it's not stressing the shelter system.
Right. Yep.
But of course, everybody bitches about it and they're like, they're going to dump the dogs in the desert. And it's like, no.
And then animal control would pick them
up. Yeah, exactly.
But like if animal control brought in an animal, regardless of species, like I feel like we had a snake there too. And like chinchillas that were found stray, which was weird. But it's regardless of age, temperament, illness, or anything. And so that's why they end up being kill shelters, because they literally don't have the space or the resources to care for all the animals that they're legally required to take. And I just have to imagine that county shelters also don't fall very high up on the list of priorities for the government, budget-wise. So it's just a shitty situation for them all around.
Yeah, we get, our county shelter gets coyotes and stuff like that every once in a while.
Oh my god.
Yeah, they're pretty decent about finding, like, sanctuaries or some sort of alternatives for them, but it's pretty tough. I mean, it doesn't happen regularly, but, like, there was a hoarder that got busted, and they had a couple coyotes. It's like, what the fuck?
Oh my God.
What is happening? Vegas is a lawless land.
Sin City, man.
Oh, there's in Nye County, which is like Pahrump, which is like an hour away and is the wild fucking west. There's tigers, there's emu farms, there's everything.
Oh my God.
Monkeys, all sorts of shit. I mean, there's stuff like that in town as well, but Nye County's animal control leaves a little bit more to be desired, so.
Cool.
But yeah, one of the most important things to note is that all sides of this business euthanize animals. All sides. I don't care if you're a rescue. I don't care if you're a no-kill shelter. I don't care if you're an open admission shelter. Everybody at some point has to euthanize an animal. There's no way to avoid it. You might have a really good track record. I had one for a long time. And then it all came down. I would say if they don't, I keep seeing this fucking article on Facebook that's like, this woman took over a county shelter and got them to 100% save rate. And I'm like, no, no. I mean, maybe she did, but if she did, there's some negligence in there. So, I mean, if they never euthanize anything for any reason, that's a red flag. A very big red flag. I mean, the harsh reality is just that not all animals are safe to be rehomed. I know we've talked about it before, but there's just really, generally speaking, not any responsible alternatives for animals that can't safely live in our communities. So sending them to sanctuary is not generally possible or a good idea, even if it is possible.
And then on top of that, not all dogs have a good quality of life either, whether mentally or physically.
Exactly. So
sometimes it's just the humane thing to do for that animal.
Absolutely. Yeah, when Boogie has a good quality of life now, my aggressive chihuahua, but he lived in the shelter for years and his entire life was hell. That entire time, for years, his life was fucking hell.
I didn't know that he lived in the shelter for years.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he would just attack all the time because of the setting. Like, he still has his issues, don't get me wrong. He's not, like, a good dog now that he's out, but...
Right.
But, you know, he has a good quality of life 90% of the time. He's happy. He's not attacking things, stuff like that. He still attacks things, just not all the time. But when he lived at the shelter, he spent years every single day going through the whole routine of people coming to his kennel and him flipping out and the kennel getting cleaned and him flipping out and going for walks and him flipping out. And every single day, he just flipped out all fucking day for years. And especially, too, Vegas has a lot of rescues that dogs live in boarding facilities for years and years. I know multiple rescues in this town that have dogs that have lived in boarding facilities for well over 2 years. And, like, yeah, the dogs are physically fine. Yeah, they get fed 2 meals a day. Yeah, hopefully they get walked every day. But that's not a fucking life to live in a kennel.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
Absolutely not. And then, yeah, just something else that I didn't know people did not realize. Just because something is called the Humane Society does not mean they're related to anything. So pretty much every town has some sort of Humane Society organization. Sometimes it's a no-kill shelter. Sometimes it's just a rescue organization. None of those are in any way related to the Humane Society of the United States. For some reason, that name gives people credibility, and it really shouldn't because it's just a name. It's just like everybody's called a foundation. Like, my rescue is called the Churchill Foundation. It doesn't mean anything. It's just our name. So, yeah. So for some reason, certain people think that, like, a humane society means it has some sort of standard, but it's not. It's just their name. We have one here called the Las Vegas Humane Society. It's not associated with anyone or anything. And it's not even really a rescue. So, yeah, the Humane Society does not mean nothing. The Humane Society of the United States is mostly a lobbyist group, and they are not related to any other organizations that I know of. And then also, shelters pretty much generally always, whether they're no-kill or open admissions, have staff and volunteers. Staff are paid, volunteers are unpaid. But rescues are kind of a toss-up. Some rescue organizations have paid staff and some don't. And then I don't know, I guess this will go in the next segment. So I'll shut up.
You should type it down so you don't forget.
I probably won't.
Cool. All right. Well, there's some information about just Rescue 101 is what we called this segment. And my brain is not going to try to call it something else because my brain isn't working right now.
We quit.
So there's some information about that. We're going to take a break here. And when we get back, we are going to talk about what you should know about rescue and shelters. Margarita Jack, how's your shitty margarita?
I added sugar to it. It helped a little. Now it's just kind of sweet and still bad. I don't know why. I was just surprised. She just took a drink and I was like, why is it clear? All of hers are always clear. So is lavender syrup not purple?
No, it's not. It's pretty clear. I did put purple food coloring in mine because I wanted it to look purple. Yeah. But so when I made the one earlier this week where I put a lot of syrup in, it was purple. But for this one, I didn't put in very much syrup. So it's kind of like a really light blue.
Did you take a picture of the purple one? Because that's the one I want.
No. I didn't.
Motherfucker. Just put purple water in a glass and send me the picture.
Oh, my God. No. My margarita is really good. Thank you for asking. So we will... There are a lot of reasons that we should be recording these Zoom calls.
I've said that since day one, and you're like, I'm not doing it if it's recorded.
Okay, I'm just going to throw in... another time that in our very first episode, you literally say you will never do anything on the camera. So, not since day one have you been saying that. But anyways.
I probably said both, to be fair.
Okay. So, if you're looking to adopt or rescue a dog, here are some basic things that you should know. If you're not an experienced dog owner, I would not necessarily recommend adopting from a shelter. And I know that seems a little bit harsh, but shelters really just don't have the resources to know their animals very well. So with a rescue, especially a foster-based rescue, that's where you're going to find fostered animals, which is what a foster-based rescue is. And that's how you could really get the lowdown on your new pet. So in a shelter, shut up.
It's not even funny. I don't know why I think it's so funny.
In a shelter, every animal is stressed out with no exceptions. Every single animal in that whole fucking building is stressed out. And nobody acts like themselves when they're stressed out, including animals. And so a dog who appears, like, let's say, calm in a shelter might actually be energetic when all their needs are met. And you could potentially be adopting a dog with a personality that you don't mesh with or even one that you can't handle. And... like, please keep in mind that that's not me shitting on shelters because they only have the resources that they have. And I think that they do the best with that. And also, the county shelter I worked at, we did foster out some animals. And I did do that for them a few times. But they only, again, they only have the resources that they have or the volunteers that they have. So they usually only do fostering if it's super necessary, like newborn kittens and puppies or medical needs animals who need around-the-clock care.
Yeah, that is a good point that I didn't think about, though. Some shelters do have foster care programs that allow you to get a little bit more insight. Like our county shelter, for instance, they do foster care, but they used to be kind of more like that, where they were like, oh, only newborns and small dogs and stuff like that. And now they've kind of opened it up to being able to foster more, like big dogs and stuff like that. But yeah, so I guess I wouldn't say the like blanket statement of if you're an inexperienced dog owner, don't go to the shelter. I think I would say more so like if you have a lot of deal breakers, maybe don't go to the shelter. Or just if you have a lot of deal breakers, you need to ask a lot more questions. So like at our county shelter, some animals are in foster, so obviously they learn a little bit more about it. But even if they're not, like, our shelter does play groups. So that can tell you at least a little bit about their dog friendliness. It's not going to tell you too much, but it's going to at least tell you basics. But there's no way for them to do cat testing. There's no way for them to do kid testing, anything like that. So they are pretty limited So if you have a lot of those deal breakers where you're like, oh, I have kids and cats and other dogs, then yeah, the shelter's probably not the best place to just go pick up a random dog. Unless you talk to them and they're like, oh yeah, he does great in playgroups and blah, blah, blah. So there are exceptions to everything, obviously. But yeah, generally, like Lily said, a foster-based rescue that the dog is actually in foster, because again, a lot of foster-based rescues keep their dogs in boarding. And again, if they're living in boarding, you don't know if they're dog-friendly and stuff like that. So if you have a lot of parameters and like you need to make sure that it's good with this or that, then foster-based is going to be your better call for sure. And again, just keep in mind that there's no regulation or standard. I literally cannot state that enough. But yeah, dogs coming from foster homes are generally going to have the best idea on temperament. And obviously they're living in a house, so they'll be able to give you a better idea of what they'll be like in your house. Some of the big things that I would look out for. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you're rescuing a dog, right? Just because a dog ends up at a shitty rescue, I mean, that's not their fault, right? There are a lot of pitfalls in that you might be getting false or inaccurate information about the dog, or they might not be fully vetted, stuff like that. So those are some pitfalls that you need to make sure that the dog is spayed and neutered, vaccinated, microchipped, doesn't have any noticeable conditions, stuff like that. My big thing that I look at is the adoption fees. There is absolutely no reason an adoption fee should be over $200, $300 if we're being real lenient. I mean, there's so many rescues in town. There's multiple rescues in town that charge $400 for an adult pit bull. And I'm like, bro, I can't give these dogs away. Who are you finding to pay $400? And it's kind of like the old school adage of like, oh, well, it goes to support all our other dogs and our medical bills and blah. That's what fundraising is for. That's what donations are for. You don't make money off adoption fees. We can't scream at people to adopt and then charge them $400 because I could go get a purebred dog for, not a good purebred dog, but I could go get a purebred dog for $400. Kind of some big things to look at as well, which are generally, most of the like pitfalls are going to be more with rescue groups than shelters, because shelters, usually if they have a facility, they at least have animal control checks and stuff like that. So usually they're a little bit more well ran, whereas rescues are kind of like the Wild West. Wild West? There we go. But the one thing I always look for that is kind of hard to find when it comes to rescues, most shelters have it, is to make sure that they have financials and statistics on their website. If you have a hard time locating their financials or their statistics, that is a big red flag.
Okay, I have a thought and I wonder what you think about it. So this is not something I've thought about a lot or researched, so I'm wondering what your thoughts are. But I was sitting here thinking, like, if you can find a purebred dog in the shelter, like, you know, people want huskies, whatever. People want Belgian Malinois, whatever. If you can find a dog like that in a shelter, that tells us that the breeder did not take their dogs back, which tells us that they were probably not bred very well, right? Like, would you agree with that?
Yep. Yeah, any well-bred dog is not going to end up in the shelter, and if they do, their breeder is going to go get them, because if you're getting from a good breeder, they're microchipped to the breeder.
Right. Yep.
End of story. So good breeders don't lose track of their dogs.
So if you're looking for a purebred dog, especially a working type dog or like a difficult dog, like a husky or something, and you think like, oh, well, I'll save money and go to the shelter, you are probably buying a dog that is going to be a lot harder for you to manage than even a well-bred one, which is probably already hard for you to manage. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, there are a lot of purebreds in shelters. Especially right now, there are tons of huskies, tons of German shepherds. Malinois are getting a little bit more common. But yeah, those are easy to find in the shelter. Obviously, if you want a puppy, a little bit harder, but still doable. Even like Weimaraners, Wieslas, stuff like that pop up quite a bit. Doodles are starting to pop up a little bit, not as much, obviously. But yeah, you can definitely, whatever dog you want, you can find in a shelter. It's just going to take some time and some consistency. What I would recommend is if you're looking for a purebred dog, find a purebred rescue is generally going to be your best bet. And then submit an application and get approved while you wait for a dog that you want to become available. So like, the Beagle Rescue here will get puppies every once in a while. It's pretty rare, but they have a list of applications that are waiting for puppies. So the second that they get in, they already have a place to go because they have a wait list. So if you're dead set on a purebred, but you want to rescue, there are purebred rescues all across the nation. There's national ones, there's local ones, there's all sorts for pretty much everything for the most part. I've noticed a couple doodle rescues popping up now, which I can't, but I just can't.
That's so interesting that there would be just like a general doodle rescue, because depending on what dog you have doodled, you're looking at a different dog, like a completely different dog. So how could you specialize in just doodle rescue? Laura's fucking face right now is so good.
I mean, there's rescues that only specialize in puppies. Like, there's rescues that specialize in everything. Some of them crack me up a little bit, but that's fine. I'm like, I don't feel like standard poodles really need their own rescue very often, but okay. Well, and that's why a lot of the purebreds are national, because they're a little bit more rare, which that leads to a whole other bunch of pitfalls, but we won't get into that. Thoroughly look at their website, look at their reviews, because bad rescues generally have a ton of bad reviews, just nobody really looks at them. And also to look at their communication. I mean, most rescues and shelters, you know, it's a very high stress, high burnout environment. Communication is not always the best, but you know, there's kind of a line, right? If you take a week to respond, that's a little different than a couple days. But yeah, so, I mean, the kind of the new wave of rescuing and sheltering is becoming more, owner retention based, where people don't have to give up their dogs because they can't afford treatment and stuff like that. So there's one rescue in town. Drives me nuts. They regularly get like purebred high value puppies that are sick, because the owners can't afford the treatment, so they take them and pay for the treatment and then adopt the dog out. Which is fine, and it's always been the practice, but these days the practice now is to help them find affordable vet care or some sort of setup like that and let them keep their fucking dog. There was, I can't remember if it was Best Friends. I think it was Best Friends. They had a podcast a couple weeks ago that was like, it's not rescue if they already have a home. Like, stop taking these dogs out of their homes. Focus on the dogs that genuinely don't have homes, which is really true. And I don't think really came up before George Floyd, I guess, because once all of the diversity and inclusion stuff started happening, it really got brought to light that rescue and shelters are predominantly white women. and our
man, that the whole industry
is not only predominantly white women, but also inherently racist, which a lot of people want to argue against, but there's really not much room to argue. Like,
if it's classist, it's racist.
You can't tell me that all these dogs aren't coming from lower income communities and getting rehomed to rich white people. That is 100%. I've been doing this for 10 years, and that is 100% what we have been doing for 10 years. Like, there's no way around that. And so kind of the new wave is a lot of owner support, which I like. I don't ever want to be involved in. But I also focus more on the dogs that legitimately don't have homes. So the strays and stuff like that that are not being reclaimed, that's who I focus on. But yeah, so, I mean, it's important to, one, just kind of know the industry and know that, like, if they're taking dogs from people that can't afford treatment, that's not a very good sign. That's pretty old school and is no longer a best practice.
That's pretty devastating, too.
Right? Well, and especially, like, it doesn't do... I mean, those people are just going to go get another puppy. So what do you... You're not, like, stopping them from getting another dog. you're just rehoming a dog that doesn't really need it when a dog that does really need it is getting euthanized at the shelter. Like, I mean, it's super tricky, don't get me wrong, because, I mean, we don't have any way to help people with their vet bills, and there's starting to be more and more alternatives now, like low-income vet clinics are starting to become a little bit more prevalent. They just opened the first one in Reno, and then we just opened one in Vegas, so there's at least two. I would imagine there are some in other states as well, and I mean, they're still, you know, they're not just going to treat $2,000 worth of parvo for free, but they do payment plans and stuff like that, so it's at least some alternative. So yeah, I mean, that's something to look at, is that one, there are starting to be more owner retention programs. There's a ton of food programs. And then they're starting to work on vet care, because that's the number one reason for surrender generally. And they're also starting to work on like insurance and home policies. Because I would say the number one reason people surrender is like moving and policies like that. And pet deposits and stuff like that. So there's starting to be a lot more programs for all that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, I would say the big things to look out for are just adoption prices, professionalism, their finances and statistics should always be on public record. There are a lot of websites too that kind of grade nonprofits. I think it's called Charity Watch. I think there's one that's like Charity Underdog. There's great nonprofits. A lot of legitimate rescues, too, will have those on their website. Like, if you go to our website, it says we're Best Friends Network Partners. I think we're gold on Charity Watch, because it's rated, like, bronze through platinum. I think we're gold on there. And we have just a bunch of, we're part of, like, the Bissell Foundation, like, all that stuff. So they should have credentials on their website, as well as financials and statistics, especially if they're a shelter. Rescues, like I said, it gets pretty dicey, because Lily could start a rescue tomorrow and with no, like, I mean, she has qualifications, obviously, but like with no nonprofit knowledge or I mean, you don't have to have a 501. You're just not tax deductible. So yeah, just pay attention, I think, is the biggest thing. People just don't realize. They just assume. They're like, oh yeah, the Animal Foundation, it's a nonprofit. And I mean, it is, but it's also a county-run shelter, so whatever you do, don't get a dog off Craigslist.
There you go.
That's what we'll leave it as. Yeah, I'd rather you buy a dog than get a dog off Craigslist, honestly. Not from a pet store.
Oh, yeah. Don't go
to- Don't do Craigslist.
Don't go to a pet store.
Or a pet store. Pet stores are fucking everywhere now, ever since the pandemic. We were down to, like, two pet stores in town. Maybe not two, but we were down to, like, you rarely saw them. And now there is one on every fucking corner. So, yeah, whether you shop or adopt, doesn't matter. As long as you're not getting it from a pet store or Craigslist or some guy you know.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I think that's most of it.
That is some information about what you should know about shelter and rescue. And we'll take a break here, and when we get back, Lara is going to rant, and it looks like she's going to do it off the cuff, because she didn't write anything down.
I didn't, because just thinking about it makes me so mad. It makes me so mad. Okay. Final margarita check! Is yours still good? Because mine's still mediocre.
Yeah, mine's great. It's almost gone. And, I'm feeling it a little bit feeling as well.
Mine is better now that it's almost gone. Or not, I guess it's only, like, halfway. But the sweetness at least made it drinkable. It's still not good.
Mine is gone now.
All done. Yeah, now you got me intrigued on the lavender, even though I don't like lavender. Mostly I just want a purple margarita. It's like a dude grape. I don't really like grape.
I got a new liqueur because I tried a drink at a restaurant that had it in it, and it was so good. And the liqueur is called Creme de Violet, and it's purple, like a deep purple color, and it's really yummy. It's kind of floral, so I don't know if you don't like lavender, maybe you wouldn't like it, but I like it a lot.
I'll do whatever I need to do to have purple for the gram. Okay, my rant. Let me pull up the fucking video. So my rant... Have you seen, this is a total tangent, but it's been popping up in my newsfeed like every 5 minutes. Have you seen this video of the Akita biting some guy in the face?
No.
No?
No. Oh, sorry. I thought you froze for a second. I have not seen that.
Oh. It's like the fourth time I've seen it today. So this guy walks over. This has nothing to do with my rant, but it's another rant. So this guy walks up, this guy and his Akita are at a restaurant, and the guy walks up and, like, goes to pet the dog, and the dog snaps at him. So then he puts his face in the dog's face and gets bit. I don't know the context. I've never watched the video with sound. but it's just amazing.
I'm trying to find it. Oh! Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh!
Like, grabs
his... Oh, no! Oh, no!
The Akita, like, grabs his cheek and, like, shakes his face. It's crazy.
Ouch.
Yeah. But also, like, he already tried to bite you once. What the fuck are you doing presenting your face to it?
Oh, my God. I would love to have audio on that, and I want the audio to be, give me a kiss.
Yeah. So, yeah, you get two rants for the price of one. Don't let people in public touch your dog, especially if your dog's a psycho. Sorry.
Also, if someone says, no, you can't pet my dog, don't keep trying to pet their dog. That's the other side of also, that.
to the original rant, you should not have a wolf dog. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your reasoning is. You shouldn't have one. They shouldn't even fucking exist. Lily and I both know and love a wolf dog. He's great. He makes a great pet. I'm not saying they don't. I'm saying they shouldn't exist. They should be illegal everywhere. And you certainly should not be breeding or buying them. If you have a wolf dog, or you want to buy one, or you want to breed one, or whatever, you're a fucking asshole. This rant was brought to you.
If you have a wolf dog that
you If you rescued a wolf dog. From, yeah, what, yeah.
From your buddy who lives in Vegas. We're not talking about you.
Okay, so yeah, I lied. If you rescued a wolf dog, I guess there are some minor allowances. yeah. Although I will, you know what? This is another tangent, but at least about wolf dogs. That girl that we stole the weekly wins from, Remy and Riley?
Remy and Riley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see her DNA test?
No.
She has that, like, black pit-looking dog. He's 10% wolf.
My goodness.
I couldn't believe it. Anyways, he looks like some sort of pit mix. I was pretty shocked by that. But yeah, you shouldn't have a wolf dog. If you rescued a dog and it ended up having wolf in it, that's obviously a little bit different. But this rant is brought to you by fucking Facebook. I do not follow any dog stuff on social media intentionally. It's my whole fucking life. I don't need to read about it all day too. But of course things get, sponsored or whatever into my feed, and some sort of dogumentary TV page, whatever the fuck that is, showed up in my newsfeed. So anyways, this promoted video to me was all about the new breed, Blue Bay Shepherds. I can't tell you how much I lost my shit when this video showed up on my newsfeed. So Blue Bay Shepherd, and it is a German Shepherd wolf hybrid that is bred with a Husky Malamute. So it's this really beautiful blue wolf looking thing. They're gorgeous, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're not pretty.
They look like black bears or something.
Yeah, they do. They're so cute. However, they shouldn't fucking exist, nor should anyone fucking own them. It's unnecessary. Why are we breeding wolves with dogs? There is, one of my friends works in, I can't with the words today. What's it called when you protect wild animals?
Conservation?
Yes. He works in wolf conservation, and say wolf dog around those people.
Because they will fuck you up. Wolf dogs should not exist. Please stop. They're illegal most places. We're trying. There are sanctuaries all over the United States that are all full of them because they don't make good pets. Some of them do. Again, don't get me wrong. You don't need a fucking wolf dog. You don't need a blue bay shepherd. I'm going to look into this more because I just can't.
Yeah, I'm Googling it right now. I'm on her page.
It makes me so angry.
They're fucking cute.
They are. They are.
I'm not going to pretend they're not. Cute. Oh my gosh, she has a puppy picture on here and he has these kinds of ears. Ugh, that's, I can't.
I hate everyone.
That's too much.
I hate everyone too much.
So something that I haven't thought of, but so I follow this rescue on Facebook called like Dogwood or something, and they have a couple of wolf dogs in their rescue who they're never going to rehome. Like they're permanent residents of this rescue. And they needed a new home because even though they bonded to their first owner, he passed away and they could not meet another person.
Because they're fucking wolves!
Right. But like something that I haven't thought about that is like even if you yourself could potentially deal with that, like there's no backup plan for you.
Yeah.
You know, like, so even if it was.
And not to mention, it's impossible to responsibly breed them. So you're just really banking on them having a good temperament.
And like, so her whole site, by the way, I'm just skimming it, but like most of the site is like, it's unknown this, it's unknown that, it's unknown their lifespan, it's unknown how trainable they are because they're a new breed. So we're just having wolf dogs being bred and sold to people, and we have no idea anything about them.
Yeah, so the video on Facebook is some freaking schmo, and then all the videos are of it at a park with children. Like, what? What? What are we doing? We're just pretending these are normal fucking dogs?
So my little spiel that I wrote down here was, there is literally no reason to buy or breed a wolf dog except as a flex. So if you're getting a pet for a flex, I think you should probably just get a nice car or home gym or something instead of a living being that you inevitably will not know how to care for and then will either end up neglecting or dumping on a shelter who can't rehome them. So that's it.
I can't. I have to go. Blue Bay Shepherds are not a thing. You don't need a fucking wolf dog of any kind.
Okay. Alrighty. Let's wrap this up. I think that about wraps it up. Our 30th episode is ready to be let out of the kennel. You can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Miss Lily's Dogs, or on my website, MissLily'sDogs.com, or my online training platform, Patreon.com/MissLily'sDogs.
And you can find me on Instagram at properpuppersLV and my website, properpuppersLV.com. We don't know what we're doing next time, per usual. But we made it to 30 episodes, so go us.
Whee!
We'll see you next time on the Doggeritaville podcast.
Thanks for listening to Doggeritaville.
Send us an email at doggeritaville@gmail.com.
Or send us a DM on Instagram at doggeritaville.
And let us know if there are any topics you'd like to see covered.
Or if there are any margaritas you want us to try.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
Until next time, give your dog a treat from us.